Well, it looks like Europe has given the big middle finger to globalism. If this just happened in one country, it might be, you know, sort of a one-off. If it happened in two countries, maybe you could say this is a coincidence, but the red wave of elections appears to have hit Europe. And we wanted to bring back in academic researcher Ralph Schulhammer, who we talked about this just a few days ago before the elections. Were we going to see a massive red wave come to Europe? And Ralph is back with us today. Ralph, it looks like that has happened. Let me just go down the list here, because, again, I think if this was just like a one or two countries, we could say, yeah, maybe a coincidence. You have France trouncing Emmanuel Macron's party in France. We just got word, breaking news just a few minutes ago, Emmanuel Macron saying he is not going to resign. Belgium, huge wins there. You have you have Italy, Germany, Ireland, Austria, Spain, Netherlands. I mean, the list is pretty extensive. And you have Poland. I just got word a few minutes ago from sources in Poland. Unbelievable results there on the conservative side as well. So I think a red wave, I think it's safe to say a red wave has struck Europe. No?
I think you're right. I mean, I know we have to say this now because in the comments, people immediately say in Europe, you don't call it a red wave. It's a blue wave because conservatives over here, I call it blue. But let's call it. I just tried to preemptively, you know, save people the effort then to once again correct the two of us in the comments. But I think in essence, you're absolutely right. This was quite remarkable. And if we would go, let's say, it's through the good, the bad, and the ugly, I think the very good is if you look at who voted or who shifted to the right, in many countries, I know the numbers for Germany, Austria, Sweden, and the Netherlands, it has been the young people. And I think we see a similar development in other countries as well. And that's very encouraging. And we see, I looked it up also in the United States, we see it across the Atlantic as well. Gen Z is becoming more conservative, and at least men. I think if you make a gender breakdown as well, this would be equally interesting. But overall, there's a shift in the younger generation because, of course, many of the policies that you and I have been talking for, well, over 3 years now, I think the younger generation starts to realize they will be in the receiving ends of the long-term consequences of all these policies, from mass migration, from inflation, from the new Green Deal, right? All these policies that on the long run have negative consequences, the young generation is going to feel them much, much harder than probably we do. The bad is, unfortunately, I would say, that in some areas, the Europeans have lost the courage of their own convictions and have very often voted for what I call the lukewarm right, you know, kind of the Merkel, von der Leyen, CDU, CSU in Germany, the same with the conservatives in Austria. So they are very often what I would call conservatives in name only. Now, it's better than voting for the Green Party, who really was trounced in all elections. But I think the real willingness to vote for a party that is kind of shifting the system, that is making true change, is still not where it's supposed to be. And that brings me directly to the ugly, which is that despite the successes you correctly mentioned, as it looks at the moment, until Macron pulls off a stunt in order to kind of increase his chances in the upcoming elections, I think that von der Leyen and all the rest of the Brussels bureaucracy will remain in power for the foreseeable future.
So that is the ugly. That is truly the ugly.
So, but I don't want to discourage this. I mean, this is a good, like an optimistic development, but let's put it this way. I call it a turning point where not yet everything has turned. Let's call it this, but it's definitely the beginning.
So what was this a repudiation of? What did these voters say we've had enough of? Forgive the preposition at the end of a sentence here, but what did they say no to? We talked about the Green Party, and as you mentioned, the Green policies seem to have been one of the major drivers of this, no?
Yes. I mean, we see one exception, by the way, are the Scandinavian countries where left-wing parties actually made significant gains, but you're absolutely correct. In continental, central, southern, western, eastern Europe, this was a repudiation of the Green parties, a repudiation of whatever the Green New Deal in its details would entail. I think it's a repudiation of the degrowth agenda, right? This idea that Europe can become a better place by being poorer, because ultimately that's the agenda of those who are currently in power, even though they don't say it openly. And people reject this. I think what we also see, especially with the younger generation, is, of course, they fear, justifiably so, they fear for their future. We talked about this previously. previously, but I have to stress this enough. There are school districts in urban areas, but also increasingly in rural areas, where 50, 60, 70% of high schoolers don't speak the local language. There is an increase in crime. There's always this absurd contention. Well, but crime rates don't really reflect it. Yes, because people are so frustrated with the system. They say, if I report a crime, nobody's going to take care about it anyway. So they don't even report crimes anymore. But that does not mean that these crimes are not happening. It's even worse. You're both the victim of a crime and an incompetent state. And this is, I think, what people increasingly turn against. Mostly so in Germany, because the Germans under the current government have shown how incompetent they can be. But you see similar developments all over Europe. So it is a frustration with many bits and pieces to it. But as you correctly pointed out, it is the beginning of a revolution against the quote-unquote system. And we can then define in greater detail what we mean by that.
Yeah, I'm encouraged by the younger generation. Anecdotally, I mean, you're hearing this from a lot of different families where their children, 12, 13 years old, come home from school and they're like, they make fun of like woke policies that they're hearing about in their schools. My son had to deal with an assembly where they got together and they heard a speaker come from some organization to explain the benefit of 15-minute cities. And he was sitting there, it's like, they don't know who his dad is back home talking to him about 15-minute city. So he's sitting there looking around at his friends like, wait a minute, we're going to not have cars. We'll live in these smart cities. You're presenting it to us as this is the answer for the world. We won't drive anywhere. We'll live in this contained zone and you'll monitor everything we do with smart transactions. And that's the way they were presenting it to these kids. And these kids are sitting there saying, this doesn't sound right.
Yeah. No, I think it's that. And another element is, don't forget, over the last 2 years, right, we were told by the mainstream media and by most of those in power, with a few exceptions, that territorial integrity of Ukraine is very important, that how wonderful it is to observe nationalism and patriotism in Ukraine. And I share that sentiment. But young people, justifiably so, once again, say, wait a moment. If I'm Austrian, if I'm German, if I'm French, so you're telling me I can love a country that is far, far away, but I cannot love my own country. And no, I think they are now saying, wait a moment, if patriotism is cool in Ukraine, I think it's also cool in France. It's also cool in Spain. It's also cool in Austria, which I think is one of the great unintended consequences of all of this, because we need more patriotism. We need more nationalism. We need more social loyalty to each other, to our traditions, to our culture, right, to the things that connect us. I think this is a very, very positive development, and I'm glad to see it reflected in the voting behavior now as well. This is hopefully the beginning of a lasting trend and not a one-off.
When you sat back and looked at the election results, were there a few big surprises that stood out to you, like wow moments for you?
A little bit. I mean, one is that I personally, I hate to admit this, I was hoping for more of a wave than it ultimately became. I always say it was a shift, but it was not an earthquake as I was hoping for. For example, the Freedom Party, which is kind of the Austrian version of the Alternative for Germany, or Austria's Le Pen, if you want, they were predicted to get between 27 and 30% of the vote. They ended up with 25% or 25.5%. And I found that a little bit disappointing. I think the AfD in Germany could have done better if they would not have almost self-destruct shortly before the election, which shows you, which is also, I think, equally important, that right-wing parties in Europe have, let's call it, different degrees of maturity. Le Pen, for example, and sometimes she gets criticized by this for non-French right-wingers, let's say, that she has also signed up to the globalist agenda, as did Meloni. And so I cut them some slack, because I think what they're doing, and maybe I'm wrong and too optimistic, but I think they are trying to play the long game. It is often forgotten that France, and Italy even more so, these are notoriously difficult countries to govern. And I think what Meloni is trying to do is, she says, in order to change things in a sustainable way, I need to stay in power. I mean, look at what the EU is talking about. Their plan, if von der Leyen cannot be maintained in office, is to replace her with Mario Draghi. I mean, this is like a zombie movie. Like, you know, at the end of the movie, they bury the monster. And then when the camera, you know, moves out, you see once again the hand coming out of the grave and saying, it's not over. And this is exactly like this. So the establishment, if the bureaucracy, they will try to strike back. And yes, there's a lot of things that I would have hoped Meloni would do that she didn't do. But I'm still happy if Meloni is in charge and not Draghi or Baerbock or, you know, or you name it. So I think we have to learn on the right that sustainable victories and a kind of a series of victories is more important than one-offs that make us feel good, but then start to fizzle out. I mean, this is basically what Trump said, and he was correct about this, about the deep state. It's not enough to sometimes be the president. It's not enough to be sometimes in office. You need to create conditions where even if you lose office, your ideas, your vision of the future is still in power. And that's the last point. And that's the crucial thing about the Greens. Like, the Greens have been decimated, but they have not infiltrated, they have marinated, they have socialized an entire generation of students, of public servants, of institutions, that even if they would be gone from parliament tomorrow, their ideas would still last, right? This is something, it's like an, I don't know, like a cold, if you want, that gradually we have to get, you know, we have to cure ourselves gradually off. And just winning the occasional election is not enough. We need to play the long game here. And I hope that this is what people like Meloni, what people like Le Pen are doing. And I think the AfD is, for example, not yet sure if they really want to be in government or if they're enjoying to be the kind of raucous, provocative, polemic opposition party, if they enjoy this a little bit too much.
Well said. Well, I think, you know, the dust is settling now, and we'll see. Perhaps we'll see a greater blue wave in Europe in the coming years, coming months ahead. Ralph Schollhammer, we always appreciate you joining us. Thank you so much for your perspective, as always. Thanks, Ralph.
Thanks for having me.